This is Audible.
Penguin Audio presents Bloodbound by Patricia Briggs. Read by Lorelei King. Chapter 1. Like most people who own their own businesses, I work long hours that start early in the morning. So when someone calls me in the middle of the night, they'd better be dying. "Hello, Mercy," said Stefan's amiable voice in my ear. "I wonder if you could do me a favor." Stefan had done his dying a long time ago, so I saw no reason to be nice. I answered the phone at... I peered blearily at the red numbers on my bedside clock. 3 o'clock in the morning. Okay, that's not exactly what I said. I may have added a few of those words a mechanic picks up to use at recalcitrant bolts and alternators that land on her toes. "I suppose you could go for a second favor," I continued, "but I prefer you to hang up and call me back at a more civilized hour." He laughed. Maybe he thought I was trying to be funny.
"I have a job to do, and I believe your particular talents would be a great asset in assuring the success of the venture."
Old creatures, at least in my experience, like to be a little vague when they're asking you to do something. I'm a businesswoman, and I believe in getting to the specifics as quickly as possible. "At 3 in the morning, you need a mechanic?"
"I am a vampire, Mercedes," he said gently. 3 in the morning is still prime time. But I don't need a mechanic. I need you. You owe me a favor."
He was right, darn him. He'd helped me when the local alpha werewolf's daughter was kidnapped. He had warned me that he'd be collecting in return. I yawned and sat up, giving up all hope of going back to sleep.
"All right, what am I doing for you?" "I'm supposed to be delivering a message to a vampire who is here without my mistress's permission," he said, getting to the point. "I need a witness. He won't notice."
He hung up without getting an answer, or even telling me when he was coming to pick me up. It would serve him right if I just went back to sleep. Muttering to myself, I threw on clothing. Jeans, yesterday's t-shirt complete with mustard stain, and 2 socks with only 1 hole between them. Once I was more or less dressed, I shuffled off to the kitchen and poured myself a glass of cranberry juice. It was a full moon, and my roommate, the werewolf, was out running with the local pack, so I didn't have to explain to him why I was going out with Stefan, which was just as well. Samuel wasn't a bad roommate as such things go, but he had a tendency to get possessive and dictatorial. Not that I let him get away with it. But arguing with werewolves requires a certain subtlety I was lacking at, I checked my wristwatch, 3:15 in the morning. For all that I was raised by them, I'm not a werewolf, not a were-anything. I'm not a servant of the moon's phases, and in the coyote shape that is my second form, I look like any other Canis Latrans. I have the buckshot scars on my backside to prove it. Werewolves cannot be mistaken for wolves. Wares are much bigger than their non-preternatural counterparts, and a lot scarier. What I am is a walker, though I'm sure there once was another name for it, an Indian name lost when the Europeans devoured the New World. Maybe my father could have told me what it was if he hadn't died in a car wreck before he knew my mother was pregnant. So all I know is what the werewolves could tell me, which wasn't much. The walker comes from the skinwalkers of the Southwest Indian tribes, but I have less in common with a skinwalker, at least from what I've read, than I do with the werewolves. I don't do magic. I don't need a coyote skin to change shape. And I'm not evil. I sipped my juice and looked out of the kitchen window. I couldn't see the moon herself, just her silver light that touched the nighttime landscape. Thoughts of evil seemed somehow appropriate while I waited for the vampire to come for me. If nothing else, it would keep me from falling asleep. Fear has that effect on me. I'm afraid of evil. In our modern world, even the word seems old-fashioned. When it comes out of hiding briefly in a Charles Manson or a Jeffrey Dahmer, we try to explain it away with drug abuse, an unhappy childhood, or mental illness. Americans in particular are oddly innocent in their faith that science holds explanations for everything. When the werewolves finally admitted what they were to the public several months ago, the scientists immediately started looking for a virus or bacteria that could cause the change, magic being something their laboratories and computers can't explain. Last I'd heard, Johns Hopkins had a whole team devoted to the issue. Doubtless they'd find something, too. But I'm betting they'll never be able to explain how a 180-pound man turns into a 250-pound werewolf. Science doesn't allow for magic any more than it allows for evil. The devout belief that the world is explainable is both a terrible vulnerability and a stout shield. Evil prefers it when people don't believe. Vampires, as a not random example, seldom go out and kill people in the street. When they go hunting, they find someone who won't be missed and bring them home where they are tended and kept comfortable, like a cow in a feedlot. Under the rule of science, there are no witch burnings allowed, no water trials or public lynchings. In return, the average law-abiding solid citizen has little to worry about from the things that go bump in the night. Sometimes I wish I were an average citizen. Average citizens don't get visited by vampires. Nor do they worry about a pack of werewolves, at least not quite the same way as I was. Coming out in public was a bold step for the werewolves, one that could easily backfire. Staring out at the moonlit night, I fretted about what would happen if people began to be afraid again. Werewolves aren't evil, but they aren't exactly the peaceful, law-abiding heroes that they're trying to represent themselves as either. Someone tapped on my front door. Vampires are evil. I knew that, but Stefan was more than just a vampire. Sometimes I was pretty sure he was my friend, so I wasn't really afraid until I opened the door and saw what waited on my porch. The vampire's dark hair was slicked back, leaving his skin very pale in the moon's light. Dressed in black from head to heels, he ought to have looked like a refugee from a bad Dracula movie. But somehow the whole outfit, from black leather duster to silk gloves, looked more authentic on Stefan than his usual bright-colored t-shirt and grubby jeans, as if he'd removed a costume rather than put one on. He looked like someone who could kill as easily as I could change a tire, with as little thought or remorse. Then his mobile brows climbed his forehead, and he was suddenly the same vampire who'd painted his old VW bus to look like Scooby's Mystery Machine.
"You don't look happy to see me," he said with a quick grin that didn't show his fangs.
In the dark, his eyes looked more black than brown. But then, so did mine. "Come in." I backed away from the door so he could. Then, because he'd scared me, I added snappishly, "If you want welcoming, try stopping by at a decent hour." He hesitated on the threshold, smiled at me, and said,
"By your invitation."
Then he stepped inside my house. "That threshold thing really works?" I asked. His smile widened again. This time, I saw a glint of white.
"Not after you've invited me in."
He walked past me and into the living room, and then turned, like a model on a runway. The folds of his duster spread out with his turn, in an effect nearly cape-like.
"So, how do you like me a la Nosferatu?"
I sighed and admitted it. "Scared me. I thought you eschewed all things gothic." I'd seldom seen him in anything other than jeans and t-shirts. His smile widened even more.
"Usually I do, but the Dracula look does have its place. Oddly enough, used sparingly, it scares other vampires almost as well as it does the odd coyote girl. Don't worry, I have a bit of costuming for you, too."
He reached under his coat and pulled out a silver-studded leather harness. I stared at it a moment. "Going to an S&M strip club, are you? I didn't realize there was anything like that around here." There wasn't, not to my knowledge. Eastern Washington is more prudish than Seattle or Portland. He laughed,
Not tonight, sweetheart. This is for your other self.
He shook the straps out so I could see that it was a dog harness. I took it from him. It was good leather, soft and flexible, with so much silver that it looked like jewelry. If I'd been strictly human, no doubt I'd have been taken aback at wearing such a thing. But when you spend a good part of your time running around as a coyote, collars and the like are pretty useful. The Morak, the leader of the North American werewolves, insists that all of the wolves wear a collar when they run in the cities, with tags that identify them as someone's pet. He also insists the names on the tag be something innocuous like Fred or Spot, no killers or fangs. It's safer that way, both for the werewolves and the law enforcement people who might encounter them. Needless to say, it's as popular with the werewolves as the helmet law was with the motorcyclists when it first went into effect. Not that any of them would dream of disobeying the Morak. Not being a werewolf, I'm exempt from the Morak's rules. On the other hand, I don't like running unnecessary risks either. I had a collar in my kitchen junk drawer, but it wasn't made of nifty black leather. "So I'm part of your costume?" I asked.
"Let's just say that I think this vampire might need more intimidation than the most," he answered lightly, though something in his eyes made me think there was something more going on.
Medea wandered out from wherever she'd been sleeping, probably Samuel's bed. Purring furiously, she wound her small self around Stefan's left leg and then rubbed her face against his boot to mark him as hers.
"Cats and ghosts don't like vampires," Stefan said, staring down at her.
"Medea likes anything that might feed or pet her," I told him. "She's not picky." He bent down and scooped her up. Being picked up isn't Medea's favorite thing, so she yowled at him several times before going back to purring as she sank her claws into his expensive leather sleeve. "You aren't cashing in your favor just to appear more intimidating," I said, looking up from the soft leather harness to meet his eyes. Unwise with vampires, he himself had told me so, but all I saw was opaque darkness. "You said you wanted a witness." "A witness to what?"
"No, I don't need you in order to appear intimidating," Stefan agreed softly after I'd stared at him for a few seconds. "But he'll think intimidation is why I have a coyote on my leash."
He hesitated and then shrugged.
"This vampire has been through here before, and I think that he managed to deceive one of our young ones. Because of what you are immune to many vampiric powers, especially if the vampire in question doesn't know what you are. Thinking you a coyote, he's probably not going to waste his magic on you at all. It is unlikely, but he might manage to deceive me as well as he did Daniel. I don't think he'll be able to deceive you."
I just learned that little tidbit about being resistant to vampiric magic. It wasn't particularly useful for me, since a vampire is strong enough to break my neck with the same effort I put into snapping a piece of celery.
"He won't hurt you," Stefan said when I was silent for too long. "I give you my word of honor."
I didn't know how old Stefan was, but he used that phrase like a man who meant it. Sometimes he made it hard to remember that vampires are evil. It didn't really matter, though. I owed him. "All right," I said. Looking down at the harness, I thought about getting my own collar instead. I could change shape while wearing a collar. My neck wasn't any bigger around as a human than as a coyote. The harness, suitable for a 30-pound coyote, would be too tight for me to regain human form while I wore it. The advantage of the harness, though, was that I wouldn't be attached to Stefan by my neck. My collar was bright purple with pink flowers embroidered on it. Not very Nosferatu. I handed the harness to Stefan. "You'll have to put it on me after I change," I told him. "I'll be right back." I changed shape in my bedroom because I had to take off my clothes to do it. I'm not really all that modest. A shapeshifter gets over that pretty fast, but I try not to get naked in front of someone who might misread my casual nudity for casualness in other areas. Although Stefan had at least three cars that I knew of, he had apparently taken a faster way, as he put it, to my house, so we got in my rabbit to travel to his meeting. For a few minutes, I wasn't certain he was going to be able to get it started. The old diesel didn't like getting up this early in the morning any more than I did. Stefan muttered a few Italian oaths under his breath, and at last it caught, and we were off. Never ride in a car with a vampire who is in a hurry. I didn't know my rabbit could peel out like that. We turned onto the highway with the RPMs redlined. The car stayed on all four wheels, but only just. The rabbit actually seemed to like the drive better than I did. The engine roughness I'd been trying for years to get rid of smoothed out, and it purred. I closed my eyes and hoped the wheels stayed on. When Stefan took us over the river on the cable bridge that dropped us off in the middle of Pasco, he was driving 40 miles an hour over the speed limit. Not slowing noticeably, he crossed through the heart of the industrial area to a cluster of hotels that sprang up on the far edge of town near the on-ramp to the highway that headed out towards Spokane and other points north. By some miracle, probably aided by the early hour, we weren't picked up for speeding. The hotel Stefan took us to was neither the best nor the worst of them. It catered to truckers, though there was only one of the big rigs parked in the lot. Maybe Tuesday nights were slow. Stefan parked the rabbit next to the only other car in the lot, a black BMW, despite the plethora of empty parking spaces. I jumped out of the car's open window into the parking lot and was hit with the smell of vampire and blood. My nose is very good, especially when I'm a coyote. But like anyone else, I don't always notice what I'm smelling. Most of the time, it's like trying to listen to all of the conversations in a crowded restaurant, but this was impossible to miss. Maybe it was bad enough to drive off normal humans, and that's why the parking lot was nearly empty. I looked at Stefan to see if he smelled it too, but his attention was focused on the car we'd parked beside. As soon as he'd drawn my attention to it, I realized the smell was coming from the BMW. How was it that the car could smell more like a vampire than Stefan the vampire did? I caught another, more subtle scent that caused my lips to draw away from my teeth, even though I couldn't have said what the bitter dark odor was. As soon as it touched my nose, it wrapped itself around me, clouding all the other scents until it was all I could smell. Stefan came around the car in a rush, snatched up the leash, and tugged it hard to quiet my growl. I jerked back and snapped my teeth at him. I wasn't a damn dog. He could have asked me to be quiet. "Settle down," he said. But he wasn't watching me. He was looking at the hotel. I smelled something else then, a shadow of a scent soon overcome by that other smell. But even that brief whiff was enough to identify the familiar smell of fear. Stefan's fear. What could scare a vampire? "Come," he said, turning toward the hotel, and tugged me forward, out of my confusion. Once I'd quit resisting his pull, he spoke to me in a rapid and quiet voice.
"I don't want you to do anything, Mercy, no matter what you see or hear. You aren't up to a fight with this one. I just need an impartial witness who won't get herself killed. So play coyote with all your might, and if I don't make it out of here, go tell the mistress what I asked you to do for me, and what you saw."
How did he expect me to escape something that could kill him? He hadn't been talking like this earlier, nor had he been afraid. Maybe he could smell what I was smelling, and he knew what it was. I couldn't ask him, though, because a coyote isn't equipped for human speech. He led the way to a smoked glass door. It was locked, but there was a keycard box with a small, red-blinking LED light. He tapped a finger on the box, and the light turned green, just as if he'd swiped a magnetic card through it. The door opened without protest and closed behind us with a final-sounding click. There was nothing creepy about the hallway, but it bothered me anyway. Probably Stefan's nerves rubbing off on me. What would scare a vampire? Somewhere, someone slammed a door and I jumped. Either he knew where the vampire was staying, or his nose wasn't hampered by the scent of that otherness like mine was. He took me briskly through the long hallway and stopped about halfway down. He tapped on the door with his knuckles, though I, and so presumably Stefan, could hear that whoever awaited us inside the room had started for the door as soon as we stopped in front of it. After all the build-up, the vampire who opened the door was almost anticlimactic, like expecting to hear Pavarotti sing Wagner and getting Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd instead. The new vampire was clean-shaven, and his hair was combed and pulled back into a tidy, short ponytail. His clothes were neat and clean, though a bit wrinkled as if they'd been in a suitcase, but somehow the overall impression I got was disheveled and filthy. He was significantly shorter than Stefan, and much less intimidating. First point to Stefan, which was good, since he'd put so much effort into his Prince of Darkness garb. The stranger's long-sleeved knit shirt hung on him, as if it rested on skeleton rather than flesh. When he moved, one of his sleeves slid up, revealing an arm so emaciated that the hollow between the bones of his forearm was visible. He stood slightly hunched, as if he didn't quite have the energy to straighten up. I'd met vampires other than Stefan before. Scary vampires with glowing eyes and fangs. This one looked like an addict, so far gone there was nothing left of the person he had once been, as if he might fade away at any moment, leaving only his body behind. Stefan, though, wasn't reassured by the other's apparent frailty. If anything, his tension had increased. Not being able to smell much around that unpleasant, pervasive bitterness was bothering me more than the vampire who didn't look like much of an opponent at all.
"Word of your coming has reached my mistress," Stefan said, his voice steady, if a little more clipped than usual. "She is very disappointed that you did not see fit to tell her you would be visiting her territory."
"Come in, come in," said the other vampire, stepping back from the door to invite Stefan through. "No need to stand out in the hallway waking up people who are trying to sleep."
I couldn't tell if he knew Stefan was afraid or not. I've never been quite sure how well vampires can scent things, though they clearly have better noses than humans do. He didn't seem intimidated by Stefan and his black clothes, though. Instead, he sounded almost distracted, as if we'd interrupted something important. The bathroom door was shut as we walked past it. I pricked my ears, but I couldn't hear anything behind the shut door. My nose was useless. Stefan took us all the way to the far side of the room, near the sliding glass doors that were all but hidden by heavy floor-to-ceiling curtains. The room was bare and impersonal, except for the suitcase, which lay closed on top of the chest of drawers. Stefan waited until the other vampire had shut the door, before he said in a cold voice,
"There is no one trying to sleep tonight in this hotel."
It seemed an odd remark, but the stranger seemed to know what Stefan meant, because he giggled, cupping a hand coyly over his mouth in a manner that seemed more in keeping with a 12-year-old girl than a man of any age. It was odd enough that it took me a while to assess Stefan's remark. Surely he hadn't meant it the way it sounded. No sane vampire would have killed everyone in the hotel. Vampires were as ruthless as the werewolves in enforcing their rules about not drawing unwanted attention to themselves. And wholesale slaughter of humans would draw attention. Even if there weren't many guests, there would be employees of the hotel. The vampire dropped his hand from his face, leaving behind a face empty of amusement. It didn't make me feel any better. It was like watching Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. The change was so great.
"No one to wake up?" he asked, as if he hadn't reacted in any other way to Stefan's comment. "You might be right. It is still poor manners to keep someone waiting at the door, isn't it? Which one of her minions are you?"
He held up a hand.
"No, wait, don't tell me. Let me guess."
While Stefan waited, all of his usual animation completely shut down, the stranger walked all the way around him, pausing just behind us. Unconstrained by anything but the leash, I turned to watch. When he was directly behind Stefan, the other vampire bent down and scratched me behind my ears. I usually don't mind being touched, but as soon as his fingers brushed against my fur, I knew I didn't want him touching me. Involuntarily, I hunched away from his hand and into Stefan's leg. My fur kept his skin away from mine, but that didn't keep his touch from feeling filthy, unclean. The scent of him lingered on my fur, and I realized the unpleasant odor that had been clogging my nose was coming from him.
"Careful," Stefan told him without looking around. "She bites."
"Animals love me."
The remark made my flesh crawl. It was so inappropriate coming from this creeping monster. He crouched on his heels and rubbed my ears again. I couldn't tell if Stefan wanted me to bite him or not. I chose not, because I didn't want the taste of him on my tongue. I could always bite him later if I wanted to. Stefan didn't comment, nor did he look anywhere except straight in front of him. I wondered if he would have lost status points if he'd turned. Werewolves play power games too, but I know the rules for them. A werewolf would never have allowed a strange wolf to walk behind him. He left off petting me, stood up, and walked around until he faced Stefan again.
"So you are Stefan, Marsilia's little soldier boy. I have heard of you, though your reputation is not what it once was, is it? Running away from Italy like that would soil any man's honor. Somehow, still, I expected more. All those stories. I expected to find a monster among monsters, a creature of nightmares who frightens even other vampires. And all I see is a dried-up has-been. I suppose that's what happens when you hide yourself in a little backwater town for a few centuries."
There was a slight pause after the other vampire's last words. Then Stefan laughed and said,
"Whereas you have no reputation at all."
His voice was lighter than usual, sounding almost rushed, as if what he was saying was of no moment. I took a step away from him without meaning to, somehow frightened by that light, amused voice. He smiled gently at the other vampire, and his tone softened further as he said,
"That's what happens when you are newly made and abandoned."
It must have been some sort of vampire super insult, because the second vampire erupted, reacting as if Stefan's words had been an electric goad. He didn't go after Stefan, though. Instead, he bent down and grabbed the bottom of the king-sized box spring, and jerk lifted it and everything above it over his head. He swung it toward the hall door, and then around so that the ends of the box spring, mattress, and bedding were balanced for an instant. He shifted his grip and threw them all the way through the wall and into the empty hotel room next door, landing on the floor in a cloud of sheetrock dust. Two of the wall studs hung splintered, suspended from somewhere inside the wall, giving the hole in the wall the appearance of a jack-o'-lantern smile. The false headboard, permanently mounted into the wall where the bed had been, looked forlorn and stupid, hanging a foot or more above the pedestal of the bed. The vampire's speed and strength didn't surprise me. I'd seen a few werewolves throw temper tantrums, enough to know that if the vampire had been truly angry, he wouldn't have had the control it took to manage the physics of swinging the two unattached mattresses together through the wall. Apparently, as in werewolf fights, battles between vampires have a lot of impressive fireworks before the main show. In the silence that followed, I heard something, a hoarse mewling noise coming from behind the closed bathroom door, as if whatever made it had already cried out so much it could only make a small noise, but one that held much more terror than a full-throated scream. I wondered if Stefan knew what was in the bathroom, and that was why he'd been afraid when we were in the parking lot. There were things that even a vampire ought to be afraid of. I took a deep breath, but all I could smell was the bitter darkness, and that was getting stronger. I sneezed, trying to clear my nose, but it didn't work. Both vampires stood still until the noise stopped. Then the stranger dusted his hands lightly, a small smile on his face, as if there had not been rage just an instant before.
"I am remiss," he said.
But the old-fashioned words sounded false coming from him, as if he were pretending to be a vampire, the way the old vampires tried to be human.
"You obviously do not know who I am."
He gave Stefan a shallow bow. It was obvious even to me that this vampire had grown up in a time and place where bowing was something done in kung fu theater movies rather than in everyday life.
"I am Asmodeus," he said grandly, sounding like a child pretending to be a king. "I said, you have no reputation," Stefan replied, still in that light, careless voice. "I didn't say I didn't know your name, Corey Littleton. Asmodeus was destroyed centuries ago.
Corfell, then, said Corey, nothing childlike in his manner at all.
I knew those names, Asmodeus and Corfell both, and as soon as I realized where I'd heard them, I knew what I had been smelling. Once the idea occurred to me, I realized the smell could be nothing else. Suddenly, Stefan's fear wasn't surprising or startling at all. Demons were enough to scare anyone. Demon is a catch-all phrase, like fey, used to describe beings who are unable to manifest themselves in our world in physical form. Instead, they possess their victims and feed upon them until there is nothing left. Corfell wouldn't be this one's name any more than Asmodeus was. Knowing a demon's name gave you power over them. I'd never heard of a demon-possessed vampire before. I tried to stretch my mind around the concept.
You are not a Corfell either, said Stefan. Though something akin to him is allowing you some use of his powers when you amuse him well enough.
He looked toward the bathroom door.
What have you been doing to amuse him, sorcerer?
Sorcerer? I thought those were just stories. I mean, who would be dumb enough to invite a demon into themselves? And why would a demon who could just possess any corrupt soul, and to offer yourself to a demon sort of presupposes a corrupt soul, doesn't it, make a deal with anyone? I didn't believe in sorcerers. I certainly didn't believe in vampire sorcerers. I suppose someone raised by werewolves should have been more open-minded, but I had to draw the line somewhere.
I don't like you, Littleton said coolly,
and the hair on the back of my neck stood up as magic gathered around him.
I don't like you at all.
He reached out and touched Stefan in the middle of the forehead. I waited for Stefan to knock his hand aside, but he did nothing to defend himself, just dropped to his knees, landing with a heavy thud.
I thought you'd be more interesting, but you're not, Corey told him.
But the diction and tone of his voice was different.
Not amusing at all. I'll have to fix that.
He left Stefan kneeling and went to the bathroom door. I whined at Stefan and stretched up on my hind feet so I could lick his face, but he didn't even look at me. His eyes were vague and unfocused. He wasn't breathing. Vampires didn't need to, of course, but Stefan mostly did. The sorcerer had bespelled him somehow. I tugged at the leash, but Stefan's hand was still closed upon it. Vampires are strong, and even when I threw my whole 32 pounds into it, his hand didn't move. If I'd had half an hour, I could have chewed through the leather, but I didn't want to be caught here when the sorcerer returned. Panting, I looked across the room at the open bathroom. What new monster was waiting inside? If I got out of this alive, I'd never let anyone put a leash on me again. Werewolves have strength, semi-retractable claws and inch-long fangs. Samuel wouldn't have been caught by this stupid leather harness and leash. One bite, and it would have been gone. All I had was speed, which the leash effectively limited. I was prepared for a horrifying sight, something that could destroy Stefan. But what Corey Littleton dragged out of that room left me stunned with an entirely different sort of horror. The woman wore one of those 50s-style uniforms that hotels give their maids. This one was mint green with a stiff blue apron. Her color scheme matched the drapes on the hallway carpets, but the rope around her wrists, dark with blood, didn't. Other than her bleeding wrists, she seemed mostly unharmed, though the sound she was making made me wonder about that. Her chest was heaving with the effort of her screaming, but even without the bathroom door between us, she wasn't making much noise, more of a series of grunts. I jerked against the harness again, and when Stefan still didn't move, I bit him hard, drawing blood. He didn't even flinch. I couldn't bear to listen to the woman's terror. She was breathing in hoarse, gulping pants, and she struggled against Littleton's hold so focused on him that I don't think she saw Stefan or me at all. I hit the end of the leash again. When that didn't work, I snarled and snapped, twisting around so that I could chew on the leather. My own collar was equipped with a safety fastening that I could have broken, but Stefan's leather harness was fastened with old-fashioned metal buckles. The sorcerer dropped his victim on the floor in front of me, just out of reach, though I'm not sure what I could have done for her even if I could get within touching distance. She didn't see me. She was too busy trying not to see Littleton. But my struggles had drawn the sorcerer's attention, and he squatted down so he was closer to my level.
"I wonder what you'd do if I let you go," he asked me. "Are you afraid? Would you run? Would you attack me? Or does the smell of her blood rouse you as it does a vampire?"
He looked up at Stefan then.
"I see your fangs, soldier. The rich scent of blood and terror. It calls to us, doesn't it? They keep us leashed as tightly as you keep your coyote."
He used the Spanish pronunciation, three syllables rather than two.
"They demand we take only a sip from each when our hearts crave so much more. Blood is not really filling without death, is it? You are old enough to remember the before times, aren't you, Stefan? When vampires ate as we chose and reveled in the terror and the last throes of our prey. When we fed truly."
Stefan made a noise, and I risked a glance at him. His eyes had changed. I don't know why that was the first thing I noticed about him when so much else was different. Stefan's eyes were usually the shade of oiled walnut, but now they gleamed like blood rubies. His lips were drawn back, revealing fangs shorter and more delicate than a werewolf's. His hand, which had tightened on my leash, bore curved claws on the ends of his elongated fingers. After a brief glimpse, I had to turn away, almost as frightened of him as I was of the sorcerer.
"Yes, Stefan," said Littleton, laughing like the villain in an old black-and-white movie. "I see you remember the taste of death. Benjamin Franklin once said that those who give up their freedom for safety deserve neither."
He leaned close.
"Do you feel safe, Stefan? Or do you miss what you once had? What you allowed them to steal from all of us?"
Littleton turned to his victim then. She made very little noise when he touched her, her cries so hoarse that they would have been inaudible to a human outside of this room. I fought the harness until it cut into my shoulders, but it did me no good. My claws tore holes in the carpet, but Stefan was too heavy for me to budge. Littleton took a very long time to kill her. She quit struggling before I did. In the end, the only noise in the room was from the vampires, the one in front of me feeding wetly, and the one beside me making helpless, eager noises, though he didn't move otherwise. The woman's body convulsed, and her eyes met mine just for a moment before they glazed over in death. I felt the rush of magic as she stilled, and the rank bitterness, the scent of the demon, retreated from the room, leaving only a faint trace behind. I could smell again, and almost wished I couldn't. The smells of death aren't much better than the scent of demon. Panting, shaking, and coughing because I'd half-strangled myself, I dropped to the floor. There was nothing I could do to help her now, if there ever had been. Littleton continued to feed. I snuck a glance over at Stefan, who'd quit making those disturbing noises. He'd resumed his frozen stance. Even knowing that he'd been able to watch that scene with desire rather than horror, Stefan was infinitely preferable to Littleton, and I backed up until my hip bumped his thigh. I huddled against him as Littleton, the white of his shirt all but extinguished beneath the blood of the woman he'd killed, looked up from his victim to examine Stefan's face. He was giggling a little in nervous pants. I was so scared of him, of the thing that had been riding him, I could barely breathe.
"Oh, you wanted that," he crooned, holding out a hand and brushing it over Stefan's lips.
After a moment, Stefan licked his lips clean.
"Let me share,"
the other vampire said in a soft voice. He leaned into Stefan and kissed him passionately. He closed his eyes, and I realized that he was finally within my reach. Rage and fear are sometimes only a hairbreadth different. I leapt, mouth open, and latched onto Littleton's throat, tasting first the human blood of the woman on his skin, Then something else, bitter and awful, that traveled from my mouth through my body like a jolt of lightning. I fought to close my jaw, but I'd missed my hold, and my upper fangs hit the bone of his spine and bounced off. I wasn't a werewolf or bulldog, and I couldn't crush bone, only dig deeply into flesh as the vampire gripped my shoulders and tore himself loose, ripping the leash out of Stefan's grip as he struggled. Blood, his blood this time, spilled over his front. But the wound began closing immediately, the vampire healing himself even faster than a werewolf could have. In despair, I realized I hadn't seriously harmed him. He dropped me to the ground and backed away, his hands covering the wound I'd made. I felt his magic flare, and when his hands fell away from his throat, the wound was gone. He snarled at me, his fangs showing, and I snarled back. I don't remember seeing him move, just the momentary feeling of his hands on my sides, a brief moment while I was hurled through the air, and then nothing. Chapter 2 I awoke on my couch to steady strokes of a tongue-in-the-face wash and Medea's distinctive thrumming. Stefan's voice came as a relief, because it meant that he was alive, just like me. But when Samuel replied, though his purring tones bore more than a passing resemblance to the noise my cat was making, there was no comfort to be had from the cold menace under the soft voice. Adrenaline pumped through me at the sound. I pushed the memory of the night's terrors aside. What was important this minute was that tonight was the full moon, and there was an enraged werewolf not 2 feet from me. I tried to open my eyes and stand up, but I encountered several problems. First, one eye seemed to be stuck shut. Second, since I seldom sleep in coyote form, I tried to sit up like a human. My floundering was made worse because my body, stiff and sore, wasn't reacting very well to movement of any kind. Finally, as soon as I moved my head, I was rewarded with throbbing pain and accompanying nausea. Medea scolded me in cat swear words and jumped off the couch in a huff.
"Shh, mercy," all the menace left Samuel's voice as he crooned to me and knelt beside the couch. His gentle, competent hands glided over my sore body. I opened my good eye and looked at him warily, not trusting the tone of his voice to indicate his mood. His eyes were in the shadow, but his wide mouth was soft under his long, aristocratic nose. I noted absently that he needed a haircut. His ash-brown hair covered his eyebrows. There was tension in his wide shoulders, and now that I was fully awake, I could smell the aggression that had been building in the room. He turned his head to follow his hands as they played delicately over my hind legs, and I caught sight of his eyes. Pale blue, not white like they would be if the wolf was too close to the surface. I relaxed enough to be sincerely grateful to be lying, however battered and miserable, on my own couch and not dead, or worse, still in the company of Corey Littleton, vampire and sorcerer. Samuel's hands touched my head, and I whimpered. As well as being a werewolf, my roommate was a doctor, a very good doctor. Of course, I suppose he ought to be. He'd been one for a very long time, and had at least 3 medical degrees gained in 2 different centuries. Werewolves can be very long-lived creatures.
"Is she all right?" Stefan asked.
There was something in his voice that bothered me. Samuel's mouth tightened.
"I'm not a vet. I'm a doctor. I can tell you that there are no broken bones, but until she can talk to me, that's all I know."
I tried to shift so I could help, but all I got was a burning pain across my chest and around my ribs. I let out a panicked little sound.
"What's wrong?"
Samuel ran a finger gently along my jawline. It hurt, too. I flinched, and he pulled his hands away.
"Wait,"
said Stefan from the far side of the couch.
His voice sounded wrong. After what the demon-possessed vampire had done to him, I had to make sure Stefan was all right. I twisted, whining with discomfort, until I could peer at the vampire with my good eye. He'd been sitting on the floor at the foot of the couch, but as I looked at him, he rose until he was on his knees, just as he'd been when the sorcerer had held him. I caught Samuel's sudden lunge out of the corner of my eye, but Stefan melted away from Samuel's hand. He moved oddly. At first I thought he was hurt, that Samuel had already hit him. Then I realized he was moving like Marsilia, the mistress of the local seethe, like a puppet, or an old, old vampire who had forgotten how to be human.
"Peace, wolf," Stefan said,
and I realized what had been wrong with his voice. It was dead, empty of any emotion.
"Try taking the harness off of her. I think she was trying to shift, but she can't while she wears the harness."
I hadn't realized that I was still wearing it. Samuel hissed when he touched the buckles.
"They're silver," Stefan said without moving closer. "I can undo them, if you let me."
"You seem to have a lot to say for yourself now, vampire," growled Samuel.
Samuel was the calmest, most even-tempered werewolf I knew, though that's not saying much, but I could hear the promise of violence in the undertones of his voice that made my ribcage vibrate.
"You asked me questions I cannot answer," said Stefan calmly,
but his voice had warmed to more human cadences.
"I have every hope that Mercedes will be able to satisfy your curiosity and mine. First, though, someone needs to remove the harness so she can return to her human form."
Samuel hesitated, then stepped back from me.
"Do it."
His voice was more growl than tone. Stefan moved slowly, waiting for Samuel to move aside before he touched me. He smelled of my shampoo, and his hair was damp. He must have taken a shower and found clean clothes somewhere. Nothing in that motel room had escaped the murdered woman's blood. My own paws were still covered in it. I had an immediate, visceral memory of the way the carpet had squished, supersaturated with dark, viscous fluid. I would have thrown up, but the sudden, sharp pain in my head cut through the nausea, a welcome distraction. It didn't take Stefan long to unbuckle the harness, and as soon as it was off, I changed. Stefan stepped away and let Samuel resume his place at my side. Anger tightened the sides of Samuel's mouth as he touched my shoulder. I looked down and realized that my skin was bruised and raw where the harness had rubbed, and everywhere were small, rust-colored spots of dried blood. I looked like I'd been in a car wreck. Thinking about cars reminded me about work. I looked out the window, but the sky was still dark.
"What time is it?"
I asked. My voice came out in a hoarse croak. It was the vampire who answered.
5:45.
"I need to get dressed," I said, standing up abruptly, which was a mistake. I clutched my head, swore, and sat down before I fell down. Samuel pried my hands away from my forehead.
"Open your eyes, Mercy."
I did my best, but my left eye didn't want very badly to open. As soon as I had both of them opened, he blinded me with a penlight.
"Damn it, Sam,"
I said, trying to squirm out of his hold.
"Just once more."
He was relentless, this time prying my sore eye open himself. Then he set the light aside and ran his hands over my head. I hissed as his fingers found a sore spot.
"No concussion, Mercy. Though you have a sizable goose egg on the back of your head, a hell of a shiner, and, if I'm not mistaken, the rest of the left side of your face will be purple before daylight. So why does the bloodsucker say you have been unconscious for the past 45 minutes?
"Closer to an hour now," said Stefan.
He was sitting down on the floor again, farther from me than he had been, but he was watching me with predatory intenseness. "I don't know," I said. And it came out shakier than I meant it to. Samuel sat beside me on the couch, pulled off the small throw blanket that hid the damage Medea had done to the back of the couch, and wrapped me in it. He started to reach for me, and I pulled away. A dominant wolf's desire to protect was a strong instinct, and Samuel was very dominant. Give him an inch and he'd take over the world, or my life if I let him. Still, he smelled of the river, desert, and fur, and of the familiar, sweet scent that belonged only to him. I quit fighting him, and let my aching head rest against his arm. The resilience and warmth of his flesh against my temple helped my headache. Maybe if I didn't move, my head wouldn't fall off. Samuel made a soft, soothing noise and ran his clever fingers through my hair, avoiding the sore spot. I hadn't forgotten or forgiven him for the flashlight, but I'd get even with him when I felt better. It had been a long time since I'd leaned on anyone, and even knowing it was stupid to let Samuel see me so weak, I couldn't force myself to move away. I heard Stefan go to the kitchen, open my refrigerator, and mess around in the cupboards. Then the vampire scent drifted nearer, and he said,
"Get her to drink this. It will help."
"Help with what?"
Samuel's voice was a good deal deeper than usual. If my head had hurt a little less, I would have moved away.
"Dehydration. She's been bitten."
Stefan was lucky I was leaning against Samuel. The werewolf started to his feet, but stopped halfway up when I whimpered at his sudden movement. Okay, I was playing dirty, but it kept Samuel from attacking. Stefan wasn't the villain. If he'd fed off of me, I was sure it had been necessary. I wasn't in any shape to step between them, so I chose to play helpless. I only wished I'd had to act a little harder to do it. Samuel sat back down and moved my hair away from my neck. His fingertips brushed a sore spot on the side that had just blended in with my other aches and pains. Once he touched it, though, it burned and ached all the way down to my collarbone.
"It was not me," Stefan said,
but there was something uncertain in his voice, as if he wasn't entirely sure of it. I unburied my head so I could see him, but whatever had been in his voice hadn't touched the bland expression on his face.
"There is no danger to her beyond anemia," he told Samuel. "It takes more than a bite to change a human to a vampire, and I'm not certain Mercy could be turned anyway. If she were a human, we'd have to worry that he could call her to him and command her obedience. But the walkers are not so vulnerable to our magic. She just needs to rehydrate and rest."
Samuel gave the vampire a sharp look.
"You're just full of information now, aren't you? If you didn't bite her, what did?"
Stefan smiled faintly, not like he meant it, and handed Samuel the glass of orange juice he tried to give him earlier. I knew why he handed it to Samuel, and not me. Samuel was getting all territorial. I was impressed that a vampire could read him that well.
"I think Mercy would be a better narrator," Stefan said.
There was a thread of uncharacteristic anxiety in his voice that distracted me from worrying about Samuel's possessiveness. Why was Stefan so anxious to hear what I had to say? He'd been there, too. I took the glass Samuel handed me and sat up until I wasn't leaning against him anymore. I hadn't realized how thirsty I'd been until I started drinking. I'm not usually fond of orange juice, Samuel's the one who drank it, but just then it tasted like ambrosia. It wasn't magic, though. When I finished, my head still hurt, and I wanted nothing more than to crawl into my bed and pull the covers over my head. But I wasn't going to get any rest until Samuel knew everything, and Stefan apparently wasn't going to talk. "Stefan called me a couple of hours ago," I began. "I owed him a favor for helping us when Jesse was kidnapped." They both listened raptly, Stefan nodding in places. When I reached the part where we entered the hotel room, Stefan sat on the floor near my feet. He leaned his back against the couch, turned his head away from me, and covered his eyes with a hand. He might just have been getting tired. The window shades were starting to lighten with the first hints of dawn as I finished up with my botched attempt at killing Littleton and my subsequent impact with the wall.
"You're sure that's what happened?"
asked Stefan without uncovering his eyes. I frowned at him, sitting up straighter. "Of course I'm sure." He'd been there, so why did he sound as if he thought I might be making things up? He rubbed his eyes and looked at me, and there was relief in his voice.
"No offense meant, Mercy. Your memories of the woman's death are very different from mine."
I frowned at him. "Different how?"
"You say that all I did was kneel on the ground while Littleton murdered the hotel maid?"
"That's right."
"I don't remember that," he said, his voice a bare whisper. "I remember the sorcerer brought the woman out, her blood cold to me, and I answered it.
He licked his lips, and the combination of horror and hunger in his eyes made me glance away from him. He continued in a whisper, almost to himself.
Bloodlust has not overcome me in a long, long time.
Well, I said, not sure if what I had to tell him would help or hurt. You weren't pretty. Your eyes glowed and you showed some fang, but you didn't do anything to her. For a moment, a pale reflection of the ruby glow I'd seen in the hotel room gleamed in his irises.
I remember reveling in the woman's blood, painting it on my hands and face. It was still there when I brought you home, and I had to wash it off.
He closed his eyes.
There is an old ceremony, forbidden now for a long time, but I remember.
He shook his head and turned his attention to his hands, which he held loosely looped around one knee.
I can taste her still.
Those words hung uncomfortably in the air for a moment before he continued.
I was lost in the blood.
He said that phrase as if the words belonged together and might mean something more complex than their literal meaning.
When I came to myself, the other vampire was gone. The woman lay as I remember leaving her, and you were unconscious.
He swallowed, and then stared at the lightning window. His voice dropped an octave, like the wolves' voices can sometimes.
I couldn't remember what had happened to you.
He reached out and touched my foot, which was the body part nearest him. When he spoke again, his voice was almost normal.
A memory lapse is not inconsistent with bloodlust.
His hand moved until it closed carefully around my toes. His skin was cool against mine.
But bloodlust usually only dulls unimportant things. You are important to me, Mercedes. It occurred to me that you were not important to Corey Littleton, and that thought gave me hope. While I drove us here.
I was important to Stefan. All I was to him was his mechanic. He'd done a favor for me, and last night I'd returned it in spades. We might possibly be friends, except that I didn't think vampires had friends. I thought about it a moment, and realized that Stefan was important to me. If something had happened to him tonight, something permanent, it would have hurt me. Maybe he felt the same way.
You think he tampered with your memory?
Samuel asked while I was still thinking. He'd scooted closer and slid an arm around my shoulders. It felt good. Too good. I slid forward on the couch away from Samuel, and Stefan let his hand fall away from my foot as I moved. Stefan nodded.
Either my memory or Mercy's is obviously wrong. I don't think he could affect the Mercy's, even being a sorcerer. That kind of thing just doesn't work on walkers like her, not unless he made a real effort.
Samuel made a hmm sound.
I don't see why he'd want to make Mercy think you were innocent of murder, especially if he thought she was just a coyote.
He looked at Stefan, who shrugged.
Walkers were only a threat for a couple of decades, and that centuries ago. Littleton is very new. I would be surprised if he's even heard of anything like a Mercy. The demon might know. One is never quite sure what demons know. But the best evidence that Littleton thinks Mercy was nothing more than a coyote is that she is still alive.
Goody for me.
All right, Samuel rubbed his face. I'd better call Adam. He needs to get his cleanup crew to the hotel before someone sees the mess and starts shouting werewolf.
He raised an eyebrow at Stefan.
Although I suppose we could just tell the police it was a vampire.
It had been less than 6 months since a werewolf had followed the Fae in coming out into the public view. They hadn't told the human population everything, and only those werewolves who chose to do so came out in the open. Most of those were in the military, people already separated from the general population. So far, we were all holding our breath, waiting to see what would come of it. But so far, there had been none of the rioting that had marked the Fae's exposure a few decades earlier. Part of the quiet reaction was the Maroc's careful planning. Americans feel safe in our modern world. Brand did his best to protect that illusion, presenting his public wolves as victims who took their affliction and bravely used it to protect